thing. It seems to be almost draconic or dragon-like, but not like the silver half-dragons of Melisaridon.
Nothing I've ever seen. Like several beasts stitched together that shouldn't have been.
Perhaps the pits turned out a new kind of demon.
All the more reason that we can't lose the stone.
Neither can we linger here. Say we move on.
So you start moving again through the city, and you pass the remains of numerous impressive pieces of stone architecture. Like in its heyday, this place must have been beautiful. You've seen some impressive things beneath the sea, Azorath. Your home city was quite a beauty to behold, but this is the first thing you've seen on land that has really been comparable. Lots of tumbled columns, shadows everywhere. You can't help but thinking that you're being followed. You keep hearing more skittering. Keep expecting another one of those beasts to jump out at any moment.
Azorath, with your Avriel longsword shattered, are you armed right now? Do you have another sword?
You would know that he had those two swords on his back all the time. But it's a beautifully crafted long sword made out of bone.
Ooh.
And it has a shark, it's shark themed, I guess. A lot of teeth.
Just wanted to make sure we aren't wandering through this uneasy wasteland.
Azorath isn't much use without a sword.
Don't let that happen.
Azorath remarks about the architecture. I've heard that most of the world was filled with vast cities like this, but from what I know, only my homeland is the remaining vestige of this once grand societies.
You have not been far else, have you? The dwarven homelands have been there for forever.
If it's been hundreds upon hundreds of years since this city was founded, I can only wonder how long it's been since it crumbled and fell. The stories of places like this haven't even reached down to my tribe.
It looks as though it's been gone for at least an elven lifetime.
Funny how our histories are so different. Humans have short memories, I suppose.
We're all rodents in the eyes of the gods.
Maybe you are.
No, I'm a fish, as you'd call me. And I'm reluctant to believe that any dwarven city in any way compared to this beautiful sea elven city in the
You're
corals
right.
of the gleaming sea.
You're right, they're dry.
Precisely. Don't talk to me about dry, and I'd blow out my gills like a whale would his blowhole.
You know we have great seas underneath the mountains as well. You've seen the water on top. But the first boats were made by the dwarves, and they are underground.
Well, you once talked about them, the vast water systems underneath the mountains.
Aye. There have been naval battles between drow and dwarf, far beneath us.
So my people aren't the only ones who've encountered the drow before.
You're not special in those regards. We fought them for years.
Did you win?
Of course we won. Though in truth, we didn't gain anything. Neither did they.
The sister city to my hometown, Esalathias, Miralathias, borders right on the Underdark. And they've battled for millennia. And it's why my forefathers left Miralathias for a more peaceful settlement. And that was 5 generations ago?
5 elven generations, I take it you mean.
No, precisely.
The drow would have never dared attack us. But it was after our battle with the whites of the north. The great white worm there. We were weak. We were kingless. But the war went on too long. Before I was a ship captain, or a mercenary, I had drow blood on this wall.
fear the drow are a scourge the whole world over. Even the Delharun have legends of our distant forefathers fighting the Curadal, the drow of western Kalorn. Scattered us to the winds, they did.
Now we find them above ground.
So as you're walking and talking, you come across a grand mountain, about 4 tiers. Coming out the top of it is a dragon's head, and it is dry now. Each bowl of it is cracked and broken and certainly cannot hold water. But it seems a little out of place in the middle of the desert.
Is this located on the map? Or is there a landmark on the map that would match the fountain, or...?
You do not see one.
Opsana, are we still going the right way?
I imagine so. We must be still be on the half of the map that was with Cordo. So, the half of the map that we have, does it depict the city as it is now, in ruins? Or does it depict the city at its height?
It certainly can't account for everything that's in the city. Your best guess is that the drow himself drew this. This does not look to be an old map, and it looks clumsily drawn.
Okay.
So continuing on, you come to a building, actually mostly intact, which is a first. It's one big round wall, lots of stone columns dotting the outside, and as you get a little closer, you see a large arched opening going inside. It looks like it's open, that there's not a ceiling to it.
I bet he's in here. Does it seem like the direction we're going is leading us there?
Yeah, you're headed toward it.
Yeah, I want to go see what's inside the archway. If it were intact, it would just be like a round building with columns, like the Parthenon style?
Exactly.
Yeah, I want to go see.
I was going to ask Opsana if she could sense what was inside of there using the crystal. Can you sense people around you? Can you...
I don't know, but...
I'm finding that you have these powers that I've only encountered with my own kind.
I've never experienced sensing others when I can't see them, but there are a lot of things that I had never experienced until recently, so let's try it out. And with that, Afsana kind of grasps the crystal around her neck and waits to see what happens.
So you grasp the crystal, you begin to concentrate onto it, trying to extend your senses beyond yourself, which you do, just not the way you thought. You feel yourself go into the crystal, and you can feel the power inside of it. And for lack of a more elegant way to put it, it feels a little bit like a battery, like it could revitalize your mind. And then in front of your eyes, there's flashes. Red, black, screams, horses thundering, and you open them up wide.
My eyes pop open, and I almost fling the crystal away from me in my haste to let it go. The initial feeling was as if it could recharge me. But then there was this painful vision. Horses' hooves, screaming, fire, thunder, or maybe just colors.
Oh no. Was this a feeling of the past, the present? Was it a dream?
It wasn't a dream. Not any kind of dream.
People love dreams.
We do love dreams, and we understand the dream world, but this didn't feel like the Dalan. As to whether it was the past or the present, I couldn't tell you.
Well, we must push forward. Good try, though. I think you should continue working on that.
Should we go see if we can see anything in this building, since it is the most intact structure that we've come across? It seems like a logical place to hide them.
Do a little reconnaissance?
Yeah.
So the three of you make your way tentatively up toward the archway. As you do, one of the moons, Fool, comes out from behind the clouds. It casts light all around you, lengthening the shadows. You're looking into an amphitheater. There are stairways going down from where you are, large stone stairs, and the stone seating extends all the way around it, 180 degrees upwards. At the bottom is a little stone stage area. The bottom of a statue of a humanoid is crumbled there. Do you wish to enter?
Do we see anything? Aside from the what you've described? There's nobody that... Manette's not sitting there, is he?
Want to roll me an intuition?
Can I do that also?
Certainly.
Did I get above an 8?
You did not
get above an 8.
I failed.
Or below an 8, rather.
Despite the moonlight, you can't trust your eyes. It's still too dark, and you have a slight queasy feeling in the pit of your stomach.
What I do is I do a little, the faintest tick, my tongue, my mouth, create a sound, and it will create an echo, because that sea elves see underwater. It's almost like echolocation.
So there's some definite rubble down the bottom, where whatever statue was there is ruined. So you can't see everything, but you do hear a slight noise from inside.
I hear a noise from inside.
If we enter, keep our backs against the wall, move around the outside of it, try to get closer to where you heard a noise.
I like that idea. I guess I'll lead.
So you do so.
Okay.
That topmost stair becoming the topmost seat, which are still in decent enough condition. There's a few crumbled seats here and there, so on occasion you have to step down the level or step back up later on as it breaks. Afsana, the queasy feeling in your stomach begins to intensify. And as you reach the other side, you're finally able to gaze around the other side of the level. You're not seeing anything, but your heart is suddenly racing.
Like I can feel something that I can't see?
You can't explain it, but you are feeling something.
If she's showing any signs of discomfort, I don't notice.
I say in a low voice to Azeroth and Arkin, there's a strange panic here. I can't...
What does that even mean?
I wish I knew. I can't see anything.
That's just the rush of battle.
Suddenly my heart is racing.
And suddenly it pops. That's the best way you can describe it.
Okay.
Arkin and Azeroth, you see Asana's eyes glaze over and her knees buckle a sec like she catches herself. But her eyes are wide and her mouth is hanging open, and it's like she's not really focusing on anything at all. You don't know what she's looking at. Afsana, everything is silent. You see the amphitheater as it was, all smooth stone and well kept. Two statues adorn the side of the stage area. Both of them cast out of solid gold. One is a man with the head of three rats. The other is a man facing it, bent on one knee. Its head is bowed, its hands raised above it in a gesture of offering. A pile of gold lays upon the hands. The people in the stands are all wearing too many clothes for the desert heat, all manners of trinkets hanging from them. Gold medallions and precious gems hang alongside broken chains and frayed strips of cloth. It seems there is nothing to bind it all together other than a feeling of excess. The men and women look sickly, eyes glazed and red. Most are holding some object tightly and nervously. Those that are not are constantly gripping and ungripping their hands as they are trying to grasp some invisible thing before it gets away. They all look nervous and are peering toward the great arching door. There stands two guards with stances set, spears at the ready, pointed to thrust. And suddenly the silence halts, and you can hear. The sound hits you like 100 musket shots, and you wish you could cover your ears, but you cannot. You hear the sound of thundering hooves all around, metal strikes metal, and screams fill the air. The two guards suddenly fall, their newly lifeless bodies rolling down the incline, pin-cushioned with arrows. Horses start pouring in through the opening, set astride by mounted warriors brandishing bows and poles. In the lead is an imposing figure of a man. He is rigid in the saddle, a stern look chiseled onto his angular face. His eyes are alert, taking in every moment around. Make a wisdom check. Just straight wisdom.
Okay. 6 success.
And you recognize him as the man from the statue when you first enters the city. His Kopesh is quite literally on fire as he charges down the incline, the flame of it casting a bright light into this dark semicircle of huddled, sickly beings. Beside him rides a woman. She's wearing many fine, colorful cloths, but you don't spot a weapon. Give me an intuition check. So around her neck, you see a chain. From that chain, a crystal. Behind them both comes many warriors riding horses, and they fill into the amphitheater. The tide of sickly beings presses himself back farther and farther, with nowhere else to go. Azarath, you instinctively supported her as her knees buckled, and it was just a moment, but she suddenly comes to, sweat pouring down her brow.
Afsana is sweating profusely, almost gasping for air.
Azarath has the sword in his right hand, and he's holding Afsana with his left. He quick, flips his sword and sheathes it, and then grabs one of the robes that are wrapped. He's actually wrapped probably as much as the people were in your dream. Overly dressed for the desert. Because whenever he can, he drenches himself with water. So he takes one of those robes and, helps dry off a little bit.
Afsan is kind of coming back to reality and seems to realize both that she just had this strange vision and that she's still in the company of other people. So she kind of turns to both of you and doesn't know whether to say thank you or to apologize.
He kind of sees that in your eyes, and he lets you stand on your own, but looks you straight in the eye and puts his hand straight in front of you, makes your eyes follow his finger, just so you can, focus on something.
It was a vision of what happened in this place. I think the man from the statue, when we first entered the city, rode into this crowded amphitheater, holding aloft a flaming blade, and the people inside were cowering in fear. I don't know what happened to them, but it was a scene of conquest.
It's clear there's a lot more to this place than there is to look at. Did you see anything particularly over here in this spot? And he points toward the area we've heard the sound.
The statues that were here, they were cast in solid gold. One was a man with the head of 3 rats, and the other a man on 1 knee, offering up hands overflowing with gold, looking up at him in supplication. There were guards that were shot down. There were dozens of mounted warriors that streamed in to celebrate or cut down the civilians. That I don't know.
Maybe in conquest? Or was it, I don't know. I had to have been.
The man memorialized in that statue was their leader. I have no doubt about that.
He was their last leader.
Yeah.
In this area.
He was leading the warriors into this amphitheater.
Did you see an ashstone?
I saw all sorts of precious things. But an ashstone, I'm not sure. This crystal, though, and with that, Afsana gestures, but takes care not to touch it out of unease with what else she might find. This crystal, I believe one of the women, perhaps his consort, or I don't know who she was, but I think she was wearing it. As Azarath asks Afsana about the Ashstone, she realizes that she's never actually looked at it. I don't know what it even looks like. Can I look at it? Is it safe, or will it corrupt me even with that little contact?
Azarath looks to his side and Arkin with an air of concern on his face, and he looks back to Afsana and says, "There's no need to worry about the Ashstone at this moment. But tell me more about this woman and this talisman."
"It's bizarre. I don't quite know what to make of it. There was a woman riding alongside him, and around her neck, she was also wearing a crystal."
"Ooh.
I suspect I may have found it."
"That's fortuitous."
"It certainly gives us information about this place and about what happened here, but whether or not it's information we can use remains to be seen."
"Are you okay after these flashes, or is it hurting you in any way?"
"It's not painful. No, it's just confusing."
"Oh, I'd say that."
"Takes a moment to get back to reality. So at this point, neither of us can see anything down on the stage that we couldn't from the door?"
"Yeah, we're at the same distance."
"Yeah, I mean, you can, given your story and what you've seen, you can see the bases of the statues."
"Sure."
"Or what you imagine is the bases of the statues."
"So those are the bases of the statues right there?"
"Yes."
"Is there gold? Do we see any gold?"
"Not from where you are, no."
"Okay. So let's stop beating around the bush like every other scenario."
"Just go straight down there?"
"No, let's just continue on. I'm imagining that it'll eventually take us down to the stage if we just follow the wall, right?"
"No, it's a round building. It'll take you back to the arched doorway."
"Oh, okay. So okay. I see what you're saying. Huh. I think we have no choice but then to walk down the steps."
"Yep."
So you go level after level, expecting who knows what. Roll intuition checks again.
"I succeed."
I make it as well.
You both hear the noise now, coming from the stage, and it reflects what makes you stop in your track. From beneath the rubble, out crawls a single rat.
"What did the noise sound like? Rat skittering?"
"Yeah, very well could have been."
"So is that all we see, or can we get closer to see more? Or see it better?"
"Like, unless something's really small, you pretty much see the entirety of the stage. Unless you want to start digging through the rubble."
"I'll take a peek just to see what's there. Are the base of the statue gold, or are they picked? Did you say they were picked clean?"
"You know, now that you're down there and you're looking at them, they're stone."
"Ah."
"And Afsana, if you're also looking at them, that is, not only are they stone, while in the same position as humanoid looking, they look to be different than the ones you saw in your vision."
"Because they were changed after the invasion."
"Yeah. I don't know if these bases are from the same statues that I saw."
"What did the people who were massacred, what did they look like in comparison to this man with the flaming sword resembles you in a way, correct?
Yeah, in his way.
So what do these people compare to him?
They looked human.
And he looked more draconic.
Yes.
Okay.
A distant ancestor, perhaps. They looked sickly and weak. I don't expect to find gold going through the rubble.
No, that's not really why I was looking either. But more to see if there's clues to, was Manek here, you know, and escaped? I don't know. That's what I'm looking for. So I head straight for the rubble. If I don't see any immediate danger.
You don't see immediate danger. The rat runs back into the rubble as you approach.
Okay, so we're looking for evidence something larger moved around. You know, this stuff should have been sitting here for a while. I want to see if there was any freshly moved dirt or rocks.
Do either of you have tracking by chance?
I do not. And I don't believe Arkin does either. He's mostly a sailor.
Nope. Never mind. Does orienteering give me any benefit when we're trying to find our way around this city?
If you find any of the landmarks on the map, then yes.
Yeah, if we don't find anything, let's move on. I'm going to leave it up to you, Afsana, since you're the one with any kind of intuition to and tie to your brother, especially.
Sure.
Whichever direction you feel we should go, we should go. But we have no other way than to go through this city, because I'm not going back toward those dragons. And especially not toward the place that Cordo died.
So, if you're done in the amphitheater, yeah, we're done here.
We're done. And just like Cordo's done.
Oh. Oh.
We must push on.
Onward.
Onward.
We're back out on the street. It must be getting close to dawn at this point, right?
Well, it was dusk when you came over. So I would say it is probably around 3 a.m. So you're probably around like 2.5-3 hours away from daylight.
Okay.
I mean, we're in greater danger at night, right? I would imagine than the day.
I would say so, just for the greater chance of being surprised by whatever is jumping out at us. If we can see it coming, it can't surprise us.
You want to rest here for the night or push on? Do we leave the amphitheater?
I don't think we've determined that yet. Okay. I mean, I think we can
safely rest here for the night.
Yeah. It seems contained enough, and it would probably be easier to keep track of which way we've been going, what decisions we've been making about how to move through the city when it's daylight.
Absolutely. Maybe I can climb up on some kind of vantage point and see. Maybe you shouldn't climb.
Yeah, no.
So we rest here then, do we?
I think this is a good spot.
At least there's only one way in. Well,
you look straight up.
Two, perhaps.
If the two of you can each pull 2 hours,
yeah,
I will pull a 4-hour shift. That way, I'll get a full night's rest with 4 hours of sleep.
Okay. So there's no ceiling whatsoever on this building.
Correct. Fully open air.
So then, the top stair, how close is that to where the ceiling would be? Like, if we went up to the top stair, are we at a higher vantage point to look out over the city?
No, the top stair meets like street level.
And then
walls
everything
go up around like maybe 15 feet above that.
Okay. And then everything kind of
slopes downward. Yeah.
Ooh. Gladiatorial pit.
I imagine you're talking about watch, Brad. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's the order?
I'll take the first watch. Maybe myself, and then Arkin, and then Azalrath.
Sure.
All right, Afsana. Roll d10.
7.
So Arkin lays himself across one of the seats on the far side of the room, like the farthest away from the door, but down toward the bottom. He lays his hammer beside him.
I'm meditating. I find a nice spot in between the two of them, wherever Sana's just hanging out on her watch.
So it should be noted that it is pretty cold. Arjun brings out his blanket, curls up in it,
I've got a tunic and a robe, so I'm probably chilly, but not freezing.
So Azelrath, you drift off to your meditative happy place. Before long, Arkin starts rhythmically snoring. And it is this you're left alone with, Afsana. Arkin, Zon logs, contrasted with the soft, slow, steady breathing of the elf. The desert wind blows over top and brings with it a bit of a chill each time it makes its way down the building you're in. And your thoughts go back to that vision you had. You try to figure out what it means, why the people on horseback look like you, who are these other people? And you can just hear the horse hooves thundering in. Clop, 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 clop. Clop, clop.
Clop.
But wait. No, that's you hear a horse. Clop, clop. And it stops. And it takes a few more steps. The unmistakable sound of horses.
As soon as I realize that it's horse hooves in reality and not a memory of the vision, I back up quickly and grasp Azelrath and Arkin each by a shoulder and roughly shake them awake. The sound of horse hooves.
So I immediately pop up, draw my sword.
Arkin draws his pistol and cocks it.
I draw my Kopesh.
You all hear it now. Somewhere out on the street. Clop, clop, clop. Stop. Neighing sound.
I can tell that it was just one rider, correct?
You never hear two horses going at the same time.
So either it's one rider, or they're very clever.
Okay. Does it sound like they're approaching? Point.
Like it doesn't sound like they're thundering down on top of you.
Okay, well, let's make our way to the exit.
Yep.
So at least we'll have the advantage if they come in the archway.
So you slowly and as silently as you can make your way to the archway. Are you in a certain order or anything?
Generally, Azelrath will be in the front.
I think the order that we had when we were on the bridge seems good.
So should I just generally suspect that it's Azelrath, Asana, Arkin?
Yeah.
So Azelrath, you peek your head out of the doorway first. In the moonlight, you see a single horse, riderless, its mane jet black.
Ooh. That seems like something Jakir would ride.
Make an intelligence check.
I make it.
You recognize it from when you first met Jakir and he offered you wine, that this is his, or was, his horse.
I very carefully tell Afsana that I think that this is Jakir's horse, and I think that if anyone's going to approach it, she should.
Yeah, but
I'd like to see what that horse has on it.
Ooh. Okay. Slowly, Afsana approaches the horse. One of my racial abilities as a Delverune is the ability to speak with animals. I approach the horse and say to it mentally, "When was the last time you saw your master?"
It actually makes noises back at you, and you just happen to understand each other.
I just know what it says.
So you say that, it swings its head around to see you and stumbles back a few steps. Who are you?
A rider from the east. Where's your master now?
Gone all night.
Turn around. Take us back where you came from. Take us where he left you.
Hungry.
What's it saying?
I turn back to Azelrath and Arkin.
You can understand that?
A special skill of my people. He says, Jankir has been gone all night. That much we knew.
Yeah, Azelrath shrugs.
Yes, you're hungry. Take us back where he left you.
He says he's hungry?
He says he's hungry.
Shit, do I have some cheese and some of that good stuff? I got some dried figs.
Oh, yeah.
I pull out a couple of dried figs, and I extend my hand. I don't move any closer. I just extend my hand toward the horse. And I put my sword away to begin with. And very carefully, like someone reaching for their wallet when the cops are around, I carefully pull out some figs. It's in my sash. The sea elves wear sashes that have many pockets, kind of like a backpack would. But it's a sash around the body.
Make some charisma checks.
Me too.
Ooh, that's not my forte as well. Azarath was more appearance. He just wanted to seem as gentle as possible.
Oh, boom.
Oh, yeah, spot on.
The horse comes, rubs its flank on you, and starts eating the figs out of Azarath's hand.
He likes it. Azarath gets all... The child in him comes out for a moment. Probably the same way that when the camel popped back up on its legs after it fed it the healing potion. That could have saved somebody.
So is this what we're going to do? Collect horses?
This seems like a fine horse, Arkin. And do you want to walk everywhere with your fat little legs?
You want to swim everywhere with a fat lip?
Do you see any water around? That is very insensitive, Arkin.
Well, I guess you'll be laying around with a fat lip. I don't know.
You know how long it's been since I had water on my skin?
Know how long it's been since I heard you whine about it?
Listen here, dwarf. I am a superior race, and I shall not stoop to your lowbrow.
Superior race.
And he kind of like buckles over at the waist and like coughs a bit and blows out his gills again. And he pulls out the salve and starts putting it on.
Do me a favor, fish. Talk about superior races where you're not blowing sand out of one of your holes.
Touche, Arkin, touche.
As soon as this horse is there, you notice that it has many gourds hanging from it.
Hmm.
The type of witch that your people use.
Oh, water skins, perhaps.
Whose owners no longer own them.
I reach out and pull the stopper from one of them, take a cautious sip, and then hand it straight off to Azareth. I heard you're thirsty.
It tastes like the water you know and love.
I offer it to the dwarf first.
He can have his own.
In that case, and he eagerly accepts it. He didn't like snatch it out of her hand, but he eagerly grabbed it.
So, how many are there?
I'd say 7 all in all.
And how many of those can I fill per day?
You can fill 2.
2. Sweet.
So it also has 2 saddlebags as well.
I open them up. Search them.
So you open up the first bag. You find the remains of a roasted melisse on a spit.
Delicious.
It hasn't all been eaten. Some hardtack. Some dried fruits. In the other one, you find a knife, a winter blanket, a few arrow shafts without heads. We'll say 4 if it matters. Flint and steel. 50 foot of rope.
Silk? Hemp?
Hemp.
How many days dry rations?
Yeah, all the food you find in there would be about 4 days dry rations. We'll say there's some mushroom put in there too as part of the dry rations.
Mushrooms?
Yeah, mushrooms.
I look at the mushrooms like, what is this? Imagine they're dried, right?
Yeah, totally. Like, that's a rarity for you too, Asana. Like, you know they exist, and you found them in, like, very strange places, but mushrooms in the desert.
Yeah. Doesn't really work. After the horse has eaten the figs, I tell it again. Turn around. Take us where your master left it.
Master. It turns and starts slowly walking in the direction that it wasn't walking before, pausing every so often to, like, sniff the ground or shake its head. As it continues to wander through the city, you start to see the sun just starting to come over the horizon. The very first rays of dawn start flooding in, and you're all very tired at this point, as you have not, like, really slept. And you guys have got maybe an hour and a half.
Alright, well, let's finish sleeping a little bit. Or let's, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Let's camp.
You are, the other part I was about to mention, is as the sun comes over, you see three intact buildings.
Really?
So one of which there is a stable and a squat stone square or rectangular building next to it. Across the street from that is a large round dome. And next to the stable and the square building, after a little alleyway, is another large rectangular building with a large wooden door set into it, enough to take a cart through.
And we're seeing this from down the street or something?
Yes.
How far off in the distance?
100 yards, maybe?
Oh, that's it?
Well,
why don't we press on?
I think, yeah. Either way, we don't want to rest out in the open.
So yeah.
If we can get to buildings that are intact and rest there, I think that's a good idea.
All the better.
Blackfoot, like, bends closer to you and whispers, "That is Targol. The captain keeps him around for his cruelty."
That guy was scary.
There are not many who have not felt a scourge upon their back here.
How long have you been on this boat?
I have been here for months.
My gosh. Are all the people on the boat Glamorian?
Everyone you can see is Glamorian. And the man who came down the stairs was not Glamorian. Because of his albinoism, it's kind of hard to tell what he was. It's hard to place. You feel something lightly brush your back.
I just kind of sit up a little straighter and turn my head ever so slightly to the right.
You see the woman again, and her eyes gesture downward.
I look down as inconspicuously as I can.
You see she's holding something wrapped in a white cloth in her hand.
Is she trying to, like, pass it to me or something?
Yeah, it looks like she's trying to offer it up to you.
I take it as slick as I can.
Yeah, you manage to take the cloth. Whatever's in there is crumbly to the touch.
I'm still trying to be inconspicuous. I, you know, peek inside the cloth.
And you see a bit of hardtack. Just dry, crumbly bread. Thankfully, mold and maggot free, but hardtack nonetheless. "You eat," she whispers.
I just, like, nod my head and, like, kind of a bow, take a nice bite and chew on it for a second slowly, and just eat it like that over the course of a few minutes or however long that would take.
It's tough because it is just super dry, and so is your mouth.
Yeah.
But you manage to choke it down.
Oh, just curious. Are my hands chained too?
No.
Choking.
Whispers to Laxa now. This is the man. Shakes his head.
I just kind of look between them questioningly.
She thinks you can save us.
Well, I would certainly like to. This is no way for us to live.
Yes, but I'd rather life than death.
A life like this? How bad can death be?
I don't wish to find out.
At least it would be a change of pace. I look back at the woman. What's your name?
I am Marna.
Marna. How long have you been here?
2 weeks. They took most of my small tribe.
I wonder what's come of my tribe. I just do, like, a quick glance. Do I recognize anybody?
Not from where you are.
I just turn to her and say, "Do you have a plan?"
She shakes her head. "You need to be strong first.
I just nod my head and take another bite of hardtack, if there's any left. Lightly rowing, not exerting much arm strength, you know?
Time passes. You finished a hardtack. Eventually, the small bit of light that comes through the hole where the oar is going out fades, and you're sure it must be night. And eventually, Prago yells, giving the command that the day is over, and everyone starts to sleep. There's no real comfortable way to go about it. Everyone's just bent up against each other. There is no modesty or anything.
No back to the bench or anything.
Yeah, no back to the bench, so everyone just kind of lays on each other. And you do your best to stay off the body to your side.
I just kind of push that over. Is there like a sleeping guard up at the end? Or is he awake?
The only person in there that's not chained is Prago. And eventually he lays on the floor.
I just kind of nudge Laxa, seeing as we're probably kind of leaning up against each other a little bit.
What is it, friend?
Now's the time. I look back at the woman. Is she awake?
You're brash. You are still weak.
What more food is there?
We will feed you tomorrow.
I suppose. Maybe they'll replace this guy, a living person. And I glance over at the dead body.
He does as well. That is as far as my dreams go for now.
I glance back at the woman. Is she awake?
No, she... Well, her eyes are closed at least.
Well, I do my best to kind of lay down and... Or not lay down, but... Get like a sitting thing on the bench going. I guess we could kind of lay on the floor a little bit. One on the floor, one on the bench.
The benches are so... Like, they're just too packed close together. There's no room. They got as many of you in there as they could.
I do my best to get some sleep.
And you sleep fitfully, having some strange dreams that you can't quite remember upon waking. But you do feel a little better in the morning. You're now only at like a -2 strength, -2 constitution instead of -3, -3.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your aches and pains are slightly alleviated. So the rowing starts. I go make sure everyone's rowing.
I'm making sure to take deep breaths, do a little bit more of my work to lighten the load on Laxa.
You look much better today.
Thank you. I feel much better. I have a way of making comebacks. I give a little chuckle.
Perhaps there is hope yet.
I glance back at Marna.
She just has that same intense stare at you when you look back.
I give her the stare back and like a nice stern nod, like feeling better, you know?
She just mouths the words, "You will be the one."
I kind of just look a little surprised and nod again.
Now, if only they'd get rid of our friend.
I look over and he's still there.
He's still there. You hear the doors at the top of the stairs get thrown open. And you hear multiple footsteps clamoring down. First comes Targer, the man in the hood.
Targer.
He comes stomping down the stairs. Indiscriminately whips one or two of the people down at the bottom. And then behind him comes pouring down some disheveled looking guys, which are obviously must be pirates. And they are dragging someone between them. Looks super roughed up. And behind them comes a man dressed much more finely. And he's coming down the stairs with what looks to be an obvious stiff leg. Like he'll plant his left foot normally, then has to swing his right.
Stumpy walk.
Yeah. However, his clothes look to be in very good repair. And despite having probably been at sea for a while, he just looks in good condition. He looks learned. Even with the stiff walk he has, he carries a certain air of dignity. Targer walks up to the edge of the bench of where you're sitting. Old man, leave! And he, like, just bends over both of you, his bulk displacing you as he undoes the manacles on the dead man. Prago is, like, nervously standing about them all.
Mm.
Parker drags the dead body out and into the hallway. They throw the man across you all into the wall. And once he's on the bench, one of the men shoves Prago over to him. Prago clicks the manacles shut and begins locking them. Once he's done, one of the men that was holding him jams himself into the little distance between the benches again, just kind of like pushing you guys all about. But he just cocks back and punches the guy right in the face. At which point the man who was more finely dressed reaches into the coat he's wearing and pulls out a pistol, aims it at the man who just did the punching, and pulls the trigger. It goes straight through his head and out the side of the wall of the ship, letting a beam of light come in. The body falls across the three of you.
I'm just shocked.
He replaces the pistol back into his coat. I do not abide violence on my ship. It is against the code. The penalty for your actions, and he turns toward the man who is chained up, is you become one of the slaves, and now you will row. Come. He turns and starts walking away, and the one alive pirate continues to follow him. Targer stands there a moment, looking just angrily all around the room, and just starts yelling,
"Row! You row now! Or you're dead like him! You row!"
I start rowing.
Everyone starts rowing. The body that's across you falls to the floor. And Targer bends over and grabs the old one and starts dragging it away and up the stairs. There's a different scent now, other than death, and that is of alcohol.
I smell, where does it seem like it's coming from? The pirate, I'm guessing.
It's the man that was chained next to you, yes.
Oh, that guy. Is he a Glamorian?
He is not. As you look at him, and you're trying to make out who or what he is, your vision falls upon his ears. And they just have an ever so slight point to them. He sighs. Well, he bends at the waist and fumbles around on the ground, and you see his foot go into his boot, and he pulls out a flask.
Is that dead body still on the floor in front of us?
Yep.
What's Prago doing?
No, Prago's still at the front.
We're all just rowing, and I look over and say to the guy, "What's your story?"
Oh, nothing good. Nothing good at all. Not from the moment I was born and not till now, not any good at all.
Tell me about it. What's your name?
My name is Ethan.
Where you come from?
Originally, the Sunlit Isles. Polaris, to be exact. That was a long time ago now.
I'm called Heskin.
Heskin. Heskin, can I give you a bit of advice?
Sure.
Don't ever piss on the captain's door. They don't take kindly to it.
Oh. Thank you.